Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit. Steven, we're back again for another episode. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Ed. How about you?
I cannot complain at all.
Good.
I'm doing very well, especially because we have a lot of good news to discuss.
We do indeed.
Listeners may be aware we're coming back. I think we had an episode between the two of us 2-3 weeks ago. So this is a bit quicker than our normal pace of discussion, but there's that much to talk about.
So. There's loads of stuff to talk about, isn't there? So what's happening at OpenCage? Anything exciting?
Yes. I mean, the big news is, as listeners will know, we've been working on this spreadsheet upload functionality, mm-hmm. and it's been going, working its way through first, private beta, then a public beta, and we are finally about to launch that. We are putting the finishing tweaks on the kind of the video that we're going to have that's going to explain it all for those misguided souls who prefer to get their information via video. but we've been making lots and lots of tweaks, lots of little improvements, staring in horror at the data that people upload. And why they think we would be able to geocode that, but anyway, we're finally there. So I don't think it will be officially launched. We might hold off until after Easter, but basically it's kind of done. So
the time it's taken, because it's been quite a while. I mean, I can't remember. I did some beta testing. I think
that was back. Before Christmas, in November.
So. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's been, there are other projects as well, and
it's complicated.
It is complicated, and it's kind of the thing where you learn as you go. Like, we need to see people use it, and then see how they break it, and see how they. But I'm really quite pleased with it, especially kind of the usability of trying to guide the user through the process, help them understand. I mean, these are non-technical people,
yeah.
So it's required quite a big paradigm shift in kind of how we've been thinking about things. So,
well, I think it's great. I think it's great. Congratulations. Anything else happening?
Well, Stephen, do you know what an MCP is?
An MCP? No, MCP. I don't.
This is the hot new thing. So an MCP
is not an MVP.
No, that is the new three-letter acronym for a piece of technology, a what do you call this, kind of a standard. Basically, the idea is to give a large language model a way to talk to an API. Okay. And this could be, so basically you might, for example, you imagine you're using some large language model on your computer and you want it to, connect to your calendar or connect to your emails, mm-hmm. or whatever. So I think it was the people behind are you familiar with the engine Claude?
Yes.
So they kind of launched this as a new kind of standard, I think around back before Christmas or so, and it started to really catch on, and lots of people are building. So you can think of an MCP kind of as a connector between the large language model and external data sources. And one category of such data sources could be APIs. For example, like our geocoding API. So we are also working on an MCP, and we'll have that ready shortly. I don't think it'll be ready before this episode goes live, but that's kind of the next immediate big project.
So just explain to me and to the non-technical people who are listening to us, give me a use case where you would use a large language model to connect to your geocoding API.
Well, you say, what are the coordinates of this address?
Oh, I see.
In a chatbot. And then I don't know if you listened to the episode I had with Adam Devender, but I've been playing a bit with ChatGPT over the last few weeks, and it's really bad at these kind of geospatial queries. And admittedly, this is the cheapest version of ChatGPT, so maybe the newer versions are better. But the thing is, by definition, I've come to another realization. These large language models, at some point they were trained on some data set and then released to the world. And so by definition, that training data set is out of date.
Yeah.
Right. And obviously the geodata changes every single, continuously, every day. So you might not want to use the large language model. You know, if you ask it, what is the capital of France, it might know. But if you ask it, you know, what about this address or whatever, you know, that might be a new address and so you might not have it. Or anyway, the point is, you know, obviously we have many, many different integrations for our API, and so we're going to also have an MCP.
Okay.
So,
okay.
That's it, pretty much. Then we got Easter break coming up.
Okay. All right. So let's go to GeoMob news. You know, we've got some great news.
We have a lot of good news, Stephen. So first of all, we need to discuss sponsorships. And I am delighted to say that Thunder Forest has renewed for another year of sponsorship. Thunder Forest is, of course, Andy Allen's company, has been a sponsor of our London event for a year or two now. And Andy himself has been a guest here on the podcast several times. They make very beautiful maps of all kinds of very unique styles, from kind of traditional maps that you might be used to, of course, all based on OpenStreetMap, but also some weird and wacky and beautiful ones. And it's really kind of at the forefront of different stylings for OpenStreetMap. So please check out Thunder Forest.
Yeah. And thank you, Andy.
Thank you, Andy.
And the big one.
The big one. So Thunder Forest is, again, returning as a sponsor of our London event. But I'm very pleased to announce that we have introduced kind of a new tier of sponsorship, which is kind of what we call a global supporter. And we have our first global supporter, and it's the Open Geospatial Consortium, more commonly known perhaps as the OGC.
Yep.
And they're coming on board, which is, you know, helping sponsor us globally. So, and full credit to you, Stephen. You negotiated this deal.
So. And thank you to Christopher and the team at OGC for supporting us. We're really grateful for that, and we hope that we will be able to repay that support by making their mission and their activities wider known amongst our listenership. And they've got some exciting things coming up that we're going to be talking to them about over the next few months. But we'll wait until they're ready to announce those.
Okay. And I think it's a perfect fit, obviously, for GeoMob because of what they're trying to do, kind of, you know, pushing innovation in the geospatial field, helping, you know, we have so many people doing so many cool things that, on the one hand, you know, it's exciting how fast it's moving. On the other hand, it can be a bit chaotic. And so we need groups like the OGC to help us coordinate that and define the standards and, you know, create the stability out of the chaos that can take the industry forward.
That's and perfect. Also, you know, you and I are both big advocates of open source and open data. But the trifecta is open source, open standards and open data all coming together, the three opens coming together. And I think anything that enables geospatial data and software to interact across boundaries, whether it's proprietary or open source, is a really good thing. So excited that they're on board.
Agree. So I look forward to having them on the podcast so we can go deeper on this, but also, of course, seeing them at the different events where they'll be talking more about this. So,
so talking about events, we've got quite a lot happening.
We've got quite a lot happening. Since we last spoke, there was an event in Edinburgh,
yep.
Which by all accounts was another big success.
I love the way you say that city's name. Say it again.
Edinburgh.
You didn't say it the same.
How did I say it before?
Edinburgh.
I don't know. I mean, first of all, I find it weird that the way it's written, you know, why don't they just do it correctly the German way?
Edinburgh.
Edinburgh, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, We had a good event there, I'm told. Numerous people commented online and said they enjoyed it. So it looks like things are going really, really strongly there. Congrats to Gala on another great event. Of course, we've got the US, the San Francisco event, coming up in 2 weeks now, or less than 2 weeks.
And they're completely sold out with a wait list.
Completely booked out. Of course, they're not sold out in that people do not need to pay to attend, but
metaphorically, it's a sellout.
It seems like they're off to a very strong start there in California. Then we have some more exciting news. The next event after that will be in early May, May 8th. We are going to have the first ever Zurich event. So big thanks to Chris Betta, who was recently here on the podcast. He has taken the lead on organizing there. So they're going to be at the Meta office, and it, you know, should be a good event. There's a lot of cool stuff going on down there in Zurich. So I have no doubt they're going to have some good speakers, and it should be a fun event. And then moving forward from that, we've got the Netherlands event, which I believe the lineup is now already set for in Utrecht later in May. And then we're straight into Berlin and London in June. And I am hoping to have another Barcelona event in May at some point. I need to nail down the schedule. So the schedule is full. I don't think anyone can complain.
Indeed. Berlin, 4th of June.
Berlin is 4th of June. Then we got London, 18th of June, back at Geovation. Both of them, we have five very good speakers. And we're actually overbooked at both of them. We've had, full credit to everyone. You know, I've been banging the drum for a long time that we need more volunteers, and we've got more than enough volunteers
now. Great. I'm thinking about maybe, I'm looking at the 4th of June and thinking it'll be nice weather.
Let's go, Stephen. Come on. You can.
And
you
I
can
haven't
stay.
Been
you
to Berlin for a while. Exactly.
Let's go.
Let's
that would
do
be
that.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So lots of events. In fact, we almost need a geocoder to map all of these events in all of these locations around the world.
It's getting more and more complicated. I have thought it is a little shameful that we don't have a map on the site. That might be a project, maybe over Easter break, to whip up a little map with, you know, pins and things like that. So
I got to tell you, on the Mappery site, we've got a map of all the maps, which is pretty pretty meta, eh? I don't know. I think we're nearly at 2,000 maps in the wild on the site, and about 2/3, 3/4 of them are geocoded, and you can zoom it. You can click on, you can open up the map, and you know, the map opens up and all the pins are clustered so that you don't get just a pin fest, you know, and then as you zoom in, they expand. And then if you click on the pin, you see the image and you see a bit of the text, and then you can click through to the post.
Well done.
And it's pretty neat. You know, I mean, I won't say it's trouble-free because it's far from trouble-free, but it seemed like a really great idea. I've got to tell you, the usage that we get out of our total usage is tiny.
Well, I could see that, because I would imagine with maps in the wild, it's more my way of consuming it is, you know, I follow on Mastodon and I see the image every day. Like I don't really have a deep need to go to the website or to browse around, really.
No. Though actually, if little plug for mappery.org here, I think I'm allowed that, aren't I?
Please. You know what, Stephen? We're going to, this could be your big break. We're going to feature that map in the show notes.
Okay. So
you might buy some more servers or whatever it is you need.
Okay. But actually, if you're stumbling on the site for the first time and there's 2,000 images, it's a real pain trying to find a way around it. You know, they're sort of archived and you can view them by month. But actually, the map is a great way to just randomly explore, you know, zoom in on an area and then click on the pins and just quickly get a glimpse of hundreds of different things, you know, over, you know, if you've got an hour to spare, you'll have a lot of fun. Anyway, we'll put the link to the map of the maps in the wild on the website, on the show notes, and then
indeed,
then we'll get flooded and the server will break and people will complain and whatever. Okay, talking about that sort of stuff, my friends over at TripGeo and Google Maps Mania, that's Rob and Kia, have been working on scrambled maps for a while. And I think we interviewed Kia a few weeks ago.
Yeah, last week's episode.
Yeah. Oh, it was last week's episode, right. And it's, you know, I find it really compulsive, this thing of you get the map tiles are all scrambled up and you have one tile in the right place and you have to drag and drop them into the right places. And it's like doing a jigsaw puzzle, but made out of OpenStreetMap tiles, I think. And it's really good and lots of fun. And they've just launched something called Scramble Maps Challenge, where each day they present three maps to you that you have to complete. And it's in a timed, and it's timed from when you start to when you finish.
Well, help me understand. Each map is completely random from a different part of the world? Or
correct.
It's a each major city? Or it's random?
It's, well, they're not completely random because they are from cities. And I mean, okay, you don't get a map that's got three-quarters sea and one right, bit of desert exactly, or something. I mean, they are all major relatively urban. No, there's some of them are minor cities, and a all lot right, of them okay, are quirky cities with non-English character sets and things right, like okay, that, okay, just to make it more difficult for those of us who don't read those things. So now you do the Scramble Maps Challenge. You do three maps timed and compete against other people and a leaderboard and all that sort of stuff. But in terms of gamification, it's a step up for them. In terms
and of where do you stand on the league table there, Stephen? How are you
yesterday I was 10th out of 10.
Okay, so there's some room for improvement.
There's room for improvement, yeah. Yeah, definite room for improvement. I think the answer is I'm a perfectionist, so I try and do it with the minimum number of mistakes. In a time trial, I think you say, screw the mistakes, just try things, and if it doesn't work, you just keep going until you get it right. But anyway, it's fun, and we'll put a link to Scramble Maps Challenge. If you haven't had a play with this, people out there, I promise you, you'll have a lot of fun with it. Might get a bit compulsive. That's my only warning. So,
very nice.
Yesterday. No, it wasn't yesterday. It was the day before yesterday, wasn't it? It was Wednesday. Yeah, it was Wednesday.
Yeah.
The 4-3, you Americans would call it, wouldn't you?
I guess. Yeah, I use European date format.
So we would say 3-4, but you would say 4.
You know what? I this is why when I write a date, I always abbreviate the month name to avoid okay, the. So I would put 3 APR.
Okay. Right. 3rd of April, 2 days after April's Fool's Day. I just mentioned that. No connection at all. The leader of the free world announced a restriction in free trade. And it prompted some interesting little geo quirks, didn't it?
Well, what was quite amusing here is this is a topic near and dear to my heart because, Trump rolled out his list of countries and, of course, the tariffs that are going to be applied to each country. And the tariffs is one topic. That's not really our domain of expertise. It's the list of countries that's fascinating. And there's been a lot of speculation as to where and how this list came from because it, frankly, it's a bit nonsensical. And basically, as it seems, they just kind of took a list of ISO codes. And this is a topic that I deal with quite a bit. This comes up a lot. Also on in our Geo Trivia contest, because sometimes we want people to put countries and we have a discussion about what is a country. And so a common technique is people say, okay, we're going to use ISO codes. But ISO codes are not countries, actually, in that you have a lot of historic
territories
that are not full countries, or that are considered full countries only partially or in certain situations, for example, of which trade could be one. But, you know, a very obvious example close to our perhaps the British audience is Gibraltar has the ISO code GI. So is Gibraltar part of the UK or not? Also, confusingly, the UK's ISO code is, of course, not UK. It's GB. Many people get that wrong. Do you know, Stephen, one of the few territories in the world that has no ISO code is a British territory?
Which one's that?
The Cypriot base areas.
Aha!
Because these are not part of Cyprus. Cyprus, we're going to do a geo thread about Cyprus, because Cyprus has four distinct regions. On the one hand, you have Cyprus, you know, the Republic of Cyprus. On the other hand, you have Northern Cyprus, which is not recognized by anyone except for Turkey. Thirdly, you have the UN buffer zone between them, which legally is part of Cyprus, the Republic of Cyprus, but is occupied by the UN and to prevent the conflict. But the fourth area, you have the British air bases.
Right.
And there's no controversy about them. These are not, you know, in most of the times when you have foreign military bases, so for example, the United States, I grew up on a U.S. military base in Germany. And there the case is clear. It is Germany, and it is leased to the United States. That is not the case in Cyprus, because basically all of Cyprus was British, and then Cyprus had independence. And the
bases did
not have independence. Exactly. They are the property of the British Ministry of Defense. Okay. But they do not have an ISO code. So there is some debate about whether you should use the ISO code GB for them or not.
And what about Guantanamo?
What about what? What about
Guantanamo?
Guantanamo is the case of it is clearly no one disputes this. It is Cuba. It is legally Cuba. Around 1900, the Cuban government at that time leased it to the United States for a fee indefinitely for a fee of $5,000 per year. Okay, and that lease continues. The U.S. maintains that lease continues to apply, and the U.S. continues to pay every year.
They might. Okay. Given the economies, they might decide they don't want to pay the $5,000.
Well, maybe not. I don't know. It's a situation similar to what used to be with Hong Kong,
right?
Where the British leased. The difference is the Hong Kong lease was not indefinite.
It
stopped.
It timed out. Yeah.
So there are a lot of different peculiarities around the world. There are, for example, also other things that many people do consider a country. Actually, I should check this on Trump's list, because, for example, Kosovo, which is a new country that, you know, some countries recognize Kosovo and some countries don't, because not every country yet recognizes Kosovo, it does not have an official ISO code. It has many, many people use the temporary ISO code XK, and the X indicates that it's provisional. Okay, but it does not have an official ISO code. So I don't know, maybe Kosovo got excluded from the list because it has no ISO code. Anyway, we have the absurd situation that we have all these weird little territories that now have tariffs applied to include unoccupied islands, like some various Australian islands, the Heard and McDonald's Islands. Or, for example, there's a thing called Norfolk Island, which is kind of over near New Zealand, between New Zealand and Australia, somewhere over there. But with the absurd situation, I mean, Norfolk Island is tiny. I think it has a population of 2,000 people or something. And it's not really exporting anything to the U.S. But then we have the situation where these territories have a different tariff than the actual country they belong to. So I hate to say it, Stephen, but I'm starting to think this leads me to believe that there are hints that perhaps these tariffs weren't well thought out.
No, surely not.
I mean,
and surely not by a government led by someone of such high IQ.
Obviously,
he must have very high standards that he expects of his people.
Obviously, I'm sure they have a crack team that was working on this, for many months to prepare this. But somehow it looks like they might have slipped up on the definition of countries.
Indeed. And it sort of reminds me, of when you're geocoding, I mean, knowing sort of what's a country, what's not a country. And there were some really quirky ones. I mean, I think Réunion, which is
a French territory. It's part of France.
It's part of France. It's a département.
It's not even a territory. I mean, it's France.
It's France. In the same way that the Azores is part of Portugal, Réunion is part of France,
Correct.
And Réunion got a lower tariff rate than France did, which seems to me it presents brilliant business opportunities for somebody, not me, but
Yes, obviously. You could produce in France, the mainland France, what they call metropolitan France, ship it to Réunion, and then export it for a lower tariff rate than than if you did it directly from metropolitan France. I don't know. None of it makes sense. But actually, to be fair, not a lot makes sense about ISO code. So your example of the Azores do not have an ISO code, but the Canary Islands do have their own ISO code. Again, it's just for weird, quirky, historical reasons.
And UN has a different set of codes, doesn't it? Country codes.
Well, no, I don't think so. I think they use ISO codes. But as I say, you have these provisional codes. I mean, you have the situation where you have, it takes a long time I don't know how often the ISO codes are changed and what the exact requirement is, in terms of what sort of majority is needed to vote for it. So, that can take a long time. And meanwhile, people need to get things done in the real world. So that's why you end up with, for example, a provisional code like XK for Kosovo, because people need a way to refer to the area. ISO codes are a minefield in general, and we have many, many users of our geocoding API who who can't be bothered to write a country name, and they just put the ISO code. Okay, which I follow the logic completely. The problem is ISO codes are unique, but they conflict with many other types of codes. So the classic example, if the geocoder, if we received the string Bogota, CO, obviously that's the city of Bogota, the capital of Colombia. If we received the string Denver, CO, that's the city of Denver in Colorado.
Right. So, and there isn't a Bogota in Colorado?
There isn't a what?
There isn't a Bogota in Colorado?
There may not be a Bogota in Colorado, but there are cities where this does happen, particularly around Spanish names. So, or also English in some cases. Or sometimes you have, for example, places in the United States, we have the state of Washington, which is abbreviated WA, which is, of course, also the abbreviation for Western Australia. And sometimes you do have conflicts, clashes. The most obvious one is CA for Canada and California. And there are places that I think there's an Ottawa, California as well, just to add to the insanity. So this is a great example of, how hard it is with countries, place names. This is the work that we do all day, every day.
And disambiguation.
Yeah, exactly. So
final question for you.
Yes.
How many Parises are there?
I don't know about that, but there are quite a lot. There are quite a lot for sure. Particularly when the other big problem with these famous places. I mean, obviously there are cities and towns named Paris, but then you have so many cities that have a Paris street.
Right.
Okay, and so then this gets into an absolute. It's a complete disaster.
I think there were either 17 or 19 Parises.
I mean,
something like that.
And
a hell of a lot of them are in the States.
But by far, Stephen, the worst offender are the Spanish speakers. Because, I mean, first of all, there are many, many different Spanish speaking countries. I think it's like one of the, you know, top five biggest languages of the world. And, you know, the Spanish, God bless them. And I mean that literally, have a very, a penchant for giving their places religious names. So you have, how many Santa Cruz's are there? How many Santiago's are there? How many, you know, it just goes on. I mean, it's like they choose from like five different names and every single place is one of these five names across all of Latin America, of course, across Spain, in Southwestern US as well. It's a complete nightmare.
That's the fun of being a geocoder.
So maybe we'll do a thread about this at one point.
If it was all simple and easy to do, there wouldn't be a business for OpenCage. So,
That's true. So
okay. By the time we talk next, will tariffs have gone up or down?
Yeah, well, we're gonna see. I don't think so. We're gonna see how long the tariffs last. I mean, there's this whole hypothesis, not to get too political here, but there's a whole hypothesis. The only point of the tariffs is to then make people come begging for an exemption, you know, so be it companies or industries or countries or whatever. So if we look at the reaction of the stock market, I think that they've placed a pretty clear verdict on the tariffs, and I think there's only so long the markets can crash before people and hopefully politicians begin to reject this. So
okay,
all right. On that cheery note, good talking with you, Stephen.
Take care. Soon. Bye. Bye.
Thanks for joining us today on the GeoMob Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter and find links to our accounts on Mastodon and LinkedIn, so that you can stay up to date on all our upcoming events. We hope to see you at an event soon.